So, did you immediately jump into a big tour when Love It to Death was released?
Well, we, you know, we were on a tour skit. You know, I mean, I think everybody has to remember that Alice Cooper was a touring band.
I guess I meant to say to the size of the venues immediately, you know, really jump.
Yeah. Oh yeah, from pretty sure an easy action, because we had pretty much played all across the country and in all the, I mean, you know, once in a while the occasional, you know, universities for college shows and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And before Love It to Death, the two pop festivals up in Canada, and one of them was the Toronto Peace Festival, and that was in, I think, June or July of 69, and then September of 69 was the Toronto Rock and Roll Revival. That's the chicken incident that happened there. Now that's all before Love It to Death.
Uh-huh.
And we're doing all the songs off Pretty Few and Easy Action, and you know, maybe some, because we kept writing all the time. Obviously, the band was a song machine. We were you know, Michael was writing songs all the time, and Dennis and I as well. But Michael was the main songwriter, and he would always have new songs. We'd be working them out on the, you know, on the road, working them out live.
What songs on Love It to Death did you did you have a lot of songwriting credit to?
Well, Love It to Death, I mentioned Hollywood Be My Name.
Right.
And then also, I'm 18 was collaborated by all five guys in the band. And I'm trying to think, I think those were the two main songs. I can't remember, but I think those are the two main songs.
And you had mentioned that some of the songs like Dwight Frye had developed once, was that once Bob came in, and did he have an influence on some of
those
songs?
Well, you know, we started... I mean, it's just one of those things. When Dwight Frye, Hollywood Be My Name, you know, there was sort of a religious, you know, sort of cult undertone to those songs, and then you know, Black Juju was just a real macabre, you know, nobody ever heard anything like that before,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I mean, I'm just playing drums all over the place on the song, and Dennis's bass line, which makes the song, because Dennis essentially wrote Black Juju. And you know, just things that hadn't been done before, and I think that you know, there was sort of a vibe happening with the record, and it was exactly what we wanted. And I think that the person that saw that and brought it out of us even more than we would have done naturally, because we'd already, you know, done some crazy jams and with the chickens and the feathers and everything, and on stage with Pretty Few and Easy Action. But now it was starting to fit together better, and Bob Ezrin was the one, I think, that helped, you know, really simplify it, emphasize it, and bring it out of us even more.
Now, for those people listening who maybe aren't familiar with the infamous chicken incident, you want to give a recant of that story?
Well, that was, like I said, that was, I think it was September 4th, 1969, at the Toronto Rock and Roll Revival in Varsity Stadium up there, And again, you know, we've been playing bars, we've been playing, you know, maybe a college for a couple thousand people, but there were 20,000 people at this show. And, you know, I think we got paid like $1,000 for this thing. And so, you know, we were virtually an unknown, but we had played at the festival earlier that summer in the same venue. And so, you know, we'd already played up there, and people were starting to hear about Alice Cooper. And so they probably figured it was going to be pretty outrageous, and I have seen videos, because it was filmed that night, and I have to agree that I mean something really clicked on the show that night. It was pretty outrageous. I mean, we were doing an outrageous show, but it all worked. It was perfect that night, and we had a couple of shows we had done before that. We had taken Doves. We had released Doves into the, you know, to the crowd, and because this was, it was a rock and roll revival, it wasn't a peace festival, but it was kind of like peace festival / rock and roll, I don't know what it is, but, so we figured, well, you know, we told the roadies to get some Doves for us, so we'd throw them out on the crazy rave up the last song, which I think was Lay Down, Die Goodbye, off of Easy Action, and so the roadies end up having a chicken. You know, they said the white bird, you know, from Detroit. You know, hey, boss, you know, we got your chicken here. So, you know, we cut to the... So all of a sudden this chicken comes out from behind the stage. And then when, you know, Alice is ripping open the feathers, and then, you know, Mike's got the CO2 cartridge blowing the feathers on the stage, and he's just like, hey, it's, you know, it's total insanity. The lights going crazy and the music going crazy. And I'm running off. That was where I ran up on the speakers, like 30 feet high above the stage. And it was a crazy night. And then Alice, you know, in all the craziness, you know, he threw the chicken out there. And then it goes into the crowd, and, you know, people just tore it to pieces. But the point was that, you know, the next morning, I think it was Associated Press and UPI, United Press International, and there were stories all over the country about that Alice Cooper played this show, bit the head of a chicken off, spit it out, and then drank the blood from the neck of the chicken.
And it was just a huge news story pretty much across the world.
Yeah, across the world. I said the country, and it was around the world. And I'm going, you know, I may have had one too many Budweisers, but I don't think that happened. No, it never did happen, but it didn't matter. It didn't matter. I mean, it was, you know, the chicken was there, and I don't, you know, somebody may have caught the chicken, taken it home. I didn't see it once, obviously, it left the stage, but I can't imagine with the pandemonium that was going on that the chickens could have survived out there. But I just thought that was the greatest story in the world. I said, all of a sudden, the first thing that I hear about the band, and so I think it's along with Lay Down, Die Goodbye, the chicken incident, and by the time we're Love It to Death, even the name Love It to Death, I mean, and Death, I mean, you know, that was from hanging out with the people in Hollywood. I mean, you know, all the transvestite and the drag queens, everybody goes, oh, I love that to death, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are the best. And, you know, so we just took one of their phrases, and, you know, Alice wrote it on the album cover, and there you got Love It to Death. And it just worked. Everything about it worked. And so, yeah, the chicken incident was huge for us.
That really made you guys pretty much a household name.
Yeah, that was the first time. There were a few other things that happened, but that was the first one.
Now, did you see a lot of religious groups and protests and anything like that at shows or anything? Did you encounter much of that?
Every time we played. I mean, people hated us. I mean, I think that's what's happened over the years, and Alice hasn't helped it as well, but people hated this band. People were scared to death of this band, and it's gotten watered down so much. I mean, we would have the town fathers, we would have the Humane Society, organizations that, you know, they'd come to our rehearsals and then say, okay, you know, you guys can play. And I'm very adamant. I get very mad about that because I'm a true believer in free speech and especially in the arts, and that we can do whatever we want. You know, we never heard. You know, the thing about that Alice. You know, that we had the big high heels on, and Alice and the guys in the band stepped on puppies and stuff on stage, or little chicks, or little ducks, or rabbits, whatever they were. And there was an Easter down in this place in Pirates World, down in Fort Lauderdale, where we played, and somebody did put some stuff, you know, some animals out there. It was an Easter Sunday show, or the night, or Good Friday, you know, over Easter weekend. And, you know, they didn't get hurt, but because they were there, the rumors were spread that, you know, they were on stage and we're smashing them with our feet. Oh, the rumors were better than anything else. I mean, you know, the shows were exciting, believe me. But the stuff that we heard afterwards, we said, man, it's like Glenn, do you remember that happening? Alice, do you remember that? I don't remember that happening, but it says here in the newspaper it did. So I got to tell you, because of that, I don't believe anything in the newspapers anymore. For the last 30 years, I don't believe the word I read in the newspapers.
So after just that huge wave with Love It to Death, was Warner Brothers pretty eager to get you guys right back in and do another record?
Is another great story. I got to tell you, think about what I just said with Warner Brothers and Linda Ronstadt and James Taylor and all the bands that they had back in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Warner Brothers, almost more than, I mean, when I say everybody hated us, Warner Brothers hated us. Every time they said it was a fluke.
They hated you even after the big wave of publicity and 18 going to number one?
Listen to me carefully. We sold a million records. We made, you know, the album went gold. Okay, our first gold album with Warner Brothers. They said it was a fluke. Again, we had to fight with them to do Killer. We finally got Killer out. Now Killer goes platinum. And they said it's a fluke again. School's Out comes out, okay? It's off the charts. It's our first. Now we get played in Los Angeles and New York. Everybody else in the country is playing Alice Cooper, from Pretty's for You to Killer. But now, New York, we can't break New York, and we can't break Los Angeles till 1972. the summer of 1972, June of 1972, when School's Out comes out, New York and Los Angeles have to play the record because they look so stupid not playing it. They were forced to. And I get very adamant about this, too, because we really fought every way. So we've done Love to Death, Killer, and School's Out. And they still fought us for Billion Dollar Baby. So, I mean, I'm telling, when I say that why I love our fans so much, because they were the only ones. There was our management, there was the five of us and Bob Ezrin that believed in the band. And the only other people in the whole wide world were the people buying the records.
Well, you would think after a succession of gold and platinum records that maybe they would jump on board.
No, they didn't. I mean, you know, obviously, I think it was around the time when the band, you know, took the year off in 75 then that they finally realized what was going on, and then they sued us because we took a year off and didn't give them a record.
So even though you had constant problems, you guys stuck it out with the label for quite a while.
Well, we had a good track record. We were building a wonderful catalog for them, and they really couldn't complain. I mean, it was... You know, it's still, you know, I don't even know if Warner Brothers ever did another band like us.
I don't really think so.
Yeah. I mean, there's such as, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, the Rolling Stone magazine back then. I mean, you know, there was one side of rock and roll. I mean, that's why, you know, we've never even come close to the Grammys. We've never come close to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There's a huge part of rock and roll that just shuns us. And that's fine. That's fine as far as I'm concerned because, you know what, that's still the establishment. They became the establishment, and they still, even in the same field, the same business we were in, we still freaked them out.
Well, there's a lot of negativity surrounding the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in this area, man, and just the bands they've inducted and bands they've overlooked and stuff. And
well, when I saw Talking Heads go in there over us, I'm going, oh, what's going on here?
And I
can't say anything bad about Talking Heads. I mean, I like them. But I'm going, you know, talk about a string of hit records that we had. I mean, selling out stadiums, you know, at the peak of our career. We held the indoor arena for a concert of 125,000 people indoors. We held that record for over 20 years in the Guinness Book of World Records. And you know, in the band, you know, and we stopped basically at the height of the band. And we were selling out, you know, all the big outdoor stadiums where the Beatles used to play. I mean, that's the stuff we were doing.
And it's just amazing that the label just wouldn't be 100% behind you.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's put it this way. They eventually did because of our management. And that's why, you know, for us, management was more than key. Because we did what we did. We did what we had to do to create, make songs, do our stage shows. And then the management, Shep Gordon, I mean, he did it all. And in early on with his partner Joe Greenberg, that they made the business happen. Matter of fact, you know, he gained such a reputation that when, you know, Blondie came and signed him up, I mean, you know, he made Blondie a hit, and Teddy Pendergrass, Luther Vandross, and Rick James, and Murray for a while was signed to him. So anybody he touched, you know, became golden.